the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Time for the last word in TV and streaming. Jo O'Shea joins us from Cork. Elaine Burke is in the studio here in Dublin with me. And Elaine, did you stick to your principles? Did you avoid watching any of the Eurovision? You didn't sneak a look at any of it, did you?
No, and I haven't even listened to any of the songs that were entrants this year. And normally I would have like my favourites on a playlist in the lead up to the event. So I've just been dipping back into my favourites from the recent past instead. So I don't even know that Bulgaria's winning hit Bangaranga was a hit or not, but by all the reporting, it sounds like it was an absolute bop, but I still haven't even listened to it. I've been that diligent about keeping away from it this year. But I think if it was removed from the context of the controversy that was surrounding it, Israel almost won it again. And I'm sure that was a tense moment for everyone in the EBU. It does sound like...
I wonder how that happened. I wonder, was there any manipulation of the public vote, Joe?
Yeah. I mean, it could be the case, all right. Like last year, that some sort of massive, unprecedented gaming of the system is going on, funded by people not that far away from Tel Aviv. Israel got what they wanted out of the event, very much so. The rest of it, I did watch it. The boycott wasn't an option. I've got a 9-year-old who's mad about music and mad about Eurovision, so it wasn't an option for me not to watch it. And it was a kind of a bittersweet affair, because I love the Eurovision. I've watched it every year since I was a kid. There were some great songs. The Italian song was fantastic. The unlikely named Sal Da Vinci with a kind of Italo disco banger that was just brilliant, and I think it should have done better. But it was a kind of a bittersweet affair, and it felt bad that Ireland weren't there as well. It really did feel, it was a loss this year, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people are saying that's a principled stance that Ireland had to take, you know.
Yeah.
And sorry, the other thing, I didn't see any of it, right? But a friend of me did show me a little clip today of during the voting that the British entry, which got zero public votes.
One point.
But the singer was Billy No Mates, basically. He sat there on his own, not even a BBC entourage around him. And the Danes took pity on him and invited him over to their bench. And he ended up waving a Danish flag, apparently.
That was kind of one of the few bright spots of the night, was how badly Britain did again. And actually getting 1 point rather than 0 points felt more like an actual insult, to be honest with you. I felt sorry for him as well.
There are things shining through that are the nice things of this, like seeing the Danes take pity on this poor loner from the UK in his nilpois. And that's a nice thing to see, to be talking about. And Bulgaria winning was a surprise as well. Like, I mean, that Italian song I know was tipped to be a hot favourite, and the Finland entry was tipped to be hot as well. And Bulgaria just had this bop of a hit, and I think people want a fun song, and they want that. And I know that from being in the fandom, I'm always voting for the fun stuff. And that shows how they can break through, and like Bulgaria doesn't have like huge voting blocks helping them out or anything like that. So it does show that the contest has a really nice positive side to it, that is the spirit of let's just all get together and have a party and have fun. But it's just now it's under this cloud of the Israel controversy. And also there are broadcasters now this year, like the Belgian broadcasters, saying they may not participate next year.
Yeah. Oh, really? Because is there not an argument that Ireland should just go back in next year, having made its point and a point of principle, and now rather than leaving something that a lot of people are interested in, almost been sort of, rather than letting the Israelis hold sway?
I think the worst...
But Mac...
Side of that argument is that.
One second, let Elaine and then Joe, you come in.
I just want to quickly say, I think the worst part of that argument is, do we think that a year from now we are still going to be where we are at with Israel and Gaza? And I think that's the really sad aspect here.
Exactly. I mean, how do you go back in if things haven't changed? And let's face it, they're unlikely to have changed. We're not looking at, you know, God knows we'd love peace in the Middle East. We'd love, you know, a happy future for the Palestinians and the Israelis, but it's not likely to happen the way things are going. So how does Ireland and how did the other countries kind of go, okay, last year we thought it was terrible, but this year we're okay with it? You just can't do that. So we're kind of locked out now, I'd say, for years to come.
Listener says, I voted for Israel in principle. How could you have voted? There was no Irish vote.
Did the rest of world vote? So maybe they were able to access that? Or
you'd go to that length to actually register a vote for Israel. Okay.
That might be Netanyahu.
Another listener says, I don't support Israel. However, the boycott just gives them more attention, says the listener. Okay. And then another listener says, Ireland didn't withdraw for the Eurovision. RTE did. Well, I suppose RTE did on our behalf, didn't they?
As a representative of Ireland, the same way we would probably talk about the FAI representing Ireland if they withdrew from their upcoming game at Israel. And I think something important to mention here about the EBU, because I've criticised a lot of their handling of this, but one thing they have allowed is for protests to happen without members being sanctioned for it, which is something that there's a lot of consternation around the challenge that we face with the FAI's situation there. They think they will face sanctions from FIFA if they do stage a boycott. But the five participating or non-participating countries who boycotted this year haven't been sanctioned by the EBU for it. It has been said that they'd be welcome back if they decided to come back. And I think that at least that form of democracy still exists in terms of this competition.
Okay, so this decision not to be involved in Eurovision has caused a limited amount of controversy, Joe, for RTE. But of course, they're back in the limelight again in relation to categorisation of pay. And there's a meeting now with the media minister, Patrick O'Donovan, tomorrow. And then they're going to be in front of us in an Oireachtas committee on Wednesday. When is it ever going to end in RTE?
Yeah. Well, you're kind of thinking, if you're Kevin Bankhurst, you're looking at this going, oh, for God's sake, you know, I mean, and it's these are legacy issues now, you might think, but actually this is stuff that was going on very recently, the most recent stuff. So you'd think that RTE at this stage would kind of say, we have to just clear house, clean house, just put it all out there, because this drip of every now and every few months, an RTE pay scandal in quotation marks coming up, it's just so, so damaging and must be really, really bad for the morale inside the organisation. I mean, this latest thing again kind of harkens back to the kind of the scandals established or the problems or the issues of the past with how do they classify Derek Mooney as, you know, as a producer or a presenter. Apparently was left off the most paid lists for a couple of years because they were classing him as a producer, although I'm not sure how many producers inside RTE are making 200,000 a year as he is. So again, it seems like they just can't escape the past, and you really would think that it must be incumbent on them now to just kind of say, we will release all of the information that we have, because otherwise it's just going to keep coming back.
Well, there's reports today, I think it was the Irish Daily Mail and somewhere else as well, about all of the people who are on over 100,000 per annum. I think it's something like a number of 200. But that isn't real full transparency, isn't it? Because that doesn't tell us what type of jobs they're actually doing as to who might actually be providing value for money if you do it in relation to other broadcasters or other businesses, and who isn't providing value for money, does it?
Yeah, I mean, and there's crazy anomalies, and it's, you know, it's unfair to pick out individual people, because it's not that, you know, it's in one respect they're worth what they can get paid. But you have George Lee, who is an environment correspondent, who's effectively a reporter for RTE on 194,000 a year. And you have other correspondents who are going to be on nowhere near that. You have people who went in at the same time or do effectively the same job, such as, you know, sports presenters who are on wildly different levels of pay as well. It's legacy stuff. I think for years there was lots of, let's say, different mechanisms being used, and certain people were getting favoured and able to kind of structure their earnings in certain ways that they got more. And it kind of has to end now at this stage, because otherwise RTE is just going to be dealing this endlessly going forward.
Okay, maybe let's just move on to other things. Let's get to picks of the week, things to watch. What are you going to suggest for us, Elaine?
Well, I was going to suggest what Joe is about to suggest, so I just wanted on the record that I really, 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 really
first.
Back that, and Joe just got there before me, so I won't spoil it. But as an alternative to that, I'm also interested in watching Ponies, which is coming to Sky and Now TV later this week from Friday. And this was really well received when it was when it came out in the US earlier this year. I think it was January. It came out on Peacock. It was taking a while to come over here. And the storyline, it's kind of a spy comedy. And it's two American women, their secretaries turned spies in 70s Moscow. And the going theory is that no one will suspect two secretaries as being these CIA operatives because of gender discrimination and all of that kind of underestimation, but also they don't seem well equipped for the job either, and the comedy from that ensues. It looks a bit of fun and I'm definitely going to check it out, but I really want to watch what Joe's recommending.
Okay, Joe, tell us what you're going for.
Yeah, there's no other show to watch. Kylie, Netflix, Wednesday, right? This is basically the life of Kylie. If you remember the Beckham documentary, which was good and bad for a whole lot of different reasons, this is kind of taking the same kind of approach. This is very much the authorized history of Kylie Minogue. But, however, Kylie Minogue's been such a huge part of the cultural zeitgeist. I was doing my Leave Insert when I first became aware of Home and Away, and everybody got obsessed with the show and Kylie and Jason and all that kind of stuff. Then she became a pop star. Then her career went up and down, and she had all of these, like, she's just been around for so long, massive comebacks with Can't Get You Out of My Head, and also has had, like, obviously some very serious health issues and so forth. This is Kylie, in her own words, telling her story with contributions from the likes of Danny, her sister, Jason Donovan, and, strangely enough, but not strange if you know Kylie's back catalogue, Nick Cave, the other great Australian pop star. No, we won't call him a pop star.
No, I don't think
so. It's
like
Kylie.
That.
It's Wednesday. No, he wouldn't. No, it's Kylie. It's on Netflix on Wednesday, and it's a must watch.
Yeah. By the way, it was Neighbours rather than Home and Away.
Oh, sorry, Neighbours.
Scarlett for you, Joe.
Yeah, that's it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago. Yeah.
Give us another. Actually, tell us about Nobody's Fool. What's it? Do people still want game shows?
Oh my God, everyone is trying to cash in on Traitors. So there's a lot of activity happening in the game show world right now because of it. And also, you know, some other things have done really well. Richard Osman's House of Games has been like a daytime TV sensation, and he's handing the reins over to Michael Sheen fairly soon on that. But Nobody's Fool does seem to be trying to ride the Traitors' coattails with its format. There's lots of people, there's an element of deception to it, and they're in these glorious grounds, which, when you've got your hosts being Danny Dyer and Emily Atack, also looks like it's riding the coattails of Rivals, which is currently being heavily promoted for its second series. Also well worth a watch. One of the most fun shows I've ever seen.
I haven't started the second series yet. I'm saving it for sort of binge watching.
And they're only releasing it in two halves. So bear that in mind. The second season is coming in two halves.
That's like a cheat. That's like having it? Seasons two and season three,
I'm
isn't
not
it?
Delighted about that. That's cheating.
Anyway, you're recommending it.
Danny and... Oh, I absolutely recommend Rivals. A riot. But Danny Dyer and Emily Atack from Rivals are in this setting that looks very Rivals-esque, and they've got people who are going to be facing some sort of trivia contest and also some sort of like carnival-esque games that you kind of see on the likes of the Traitors. But the point is that they have to make the other players think that they are the smartest person in this contest, and only they will know the results of their trivia contests and things like that. So there's an element of deception. I don't really know how it's going to work, but it's really just trying to tap into the Traitors. Is it going to be as good as the Traitors, or is it going to flop like The Neighbourhood, which was another show that tried to do this style of format that mixes things together and also has people deceiving each other and betraying each other? I don't know which way this one's going to go, but it starts on Saturday if anyone wants to check it out.
Okay, and you have one other you want to, also on Netflix from tomorrow. Joe, are you a Liverpool fan or something, are you?
No, I'm not a Liverpool, I'm a Cork City fan.
Good man, but, Joe.
But we all remember that night in Istanbul, as they say, the miracle in Istanbul. And there's a very good series, Untold, which kind of came from America, which basically kind of tells the behind the scenes stories of sports. I mean, it's an old format, but it's really well done by Netflix. And this week, they're looking at Untold UK, which is the UK strand. They do a Jamie Vardy one as well, which is pretty good. And it's Liverpool, the miracle of Istanbul. And it's looking at that night in 2005, Liverpool 3-0 down to AC Milan at halftime. Done, gone, buried, and then we all know what happens next. Listen, Liverpool fans will love it. They can't relive that this night more often enough. And I think for sports fans as well, the Untold UK franchise series is well worth checking out on Netflix.
Thank you very much to both of you, Joe Shea and Elaine Burke.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.